it is an industry that is on the verge of disruption, we believe, especially as women become more empowered and start talking about these things more. And we think it's about time that someone challenges them.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. This week is week two of our Rising Stars series. And this week we're chatting to Fiona from Riley. Riley are exploding in the female healthcare space. They're a young company. As you're listening to this chat with Fiona, just remember one thing. This time last year, this wasn't even a concept. They hadn't even come up with the idea yet. So if you're sitting there thinking, you know what, 2022 might be my year, 2021 has just been a rough one. Think of where you could be in 12 months. That's what I thought of all during this chat with Fiona. What a remarkable transformation 12 months can have. Bear in mind, throughout the whole thing, she started as a solo founder herself. She brings us through her journey as a solo founder, building up one company, having it destroyed by COVID, pivoting, building it back up, and then selling that company for going on to launch Riley with Anya and Lauren, her two best friends. It's an incredible chat. You're going to learn a couple of key things here to watch out for. Number one, how to launch a business during a pandemic. And listen to the point whereby she breaks down how they decided to go for Riley. They were all in three full-time jobs at the time. And this is a question I get a lot. How do you transition from full-time employment to being an entrepreneur? Fiona breaks this down beautifully. She also spells out her three key stages for launching a brand, and how to get early exposure. Huge. And also how to close a funding round of over €400,000 despite only being less than 6 months in business at the time. It's phenomenal. It's a great chat. Before we start, a quick shout out and thank you to my partners, as always, for season 7. First up, we have ZoomParty.ie, which is the sister company of FindAVenue.ie, run by Sean. Sean has just won an award at Startup Ireland Awards for the best virtual party provider, and they are. If it's still time to get something done before Christmas, so if you're looking to do something virtual for your staff, because you're going to have to now, with all the lockdowns and all that crack, you can get on to ZoomParty.ie and they'll help you do an event for your staff all online. Secondly, we've Bay Street Innovation. Gareth and his team, just simply think of them as your technical partner. If you're a non-technical founder, or even if you are a technical founder, they'll help you build out an MVP. Or if you have a lot of laborious kind of heavy lifting tasks in your business, like repetition tasks that's done every day, reports and stages and stuff been done, they will help you figure out a process where you can streamline it and, if possible, automate the whole thing. Check out baystreet.io. And finally, Chapter. Chapter are a 360-degree branding solutions company based down in Cork. Deirdre and her team are the number one people you need to think of when you think of branding and storytelling and marketing. They can do it all from concept stage to redesign to anything you're thinking of. If you've got a brand and you're thinking of redesign, they can do that. Or if you're a brand new company and you've got a bit of budget to spend and you're thinking, how can I create something that's going to stand out? They will help you. That's chapter.ie. Now, let's jump straight in to my chat with Fiona from Riley. Fiona, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me, Gary.
It's great to chat to you.
Yeah, I'm excited. Slightly nervous, but also excited.
I'm nervous too. It's okay. You've had a busy year.
Yes. Very busy year. I can't believe it's December already.
What's been going on?
So, let's just started a new business, you know yourself.
Yeah, let's start at the start.
Yeah, so launched a new business this year with myself and two friends, Anya and Lauren, my co-founders. So I had been running another e-commerce business by myself, and myself and my co-founders, Anya and Lauren, saw this opportunity and jumped on it. So we started Riley, which is a subscription service for eco-friendly period products. And we launched, we kind of came up with the idea this time last year, like early December, and we launched to market by April. Like we had all had full-time jobs at the time. And so we were juggling those as well. And now, during the summer, we all kind of became full-time focused on Riley. And wow, here we are. We just closed our first fundraise there a couple of weeks ago, and like it's been a whirlwind of a year, but like we've very, very big plans now for next year. So just looking forward to getting the head down and continuing to grow this.
Okay,
business.
There's a lot to unpack there, as they say.
Yeah.
There's a lot to go back on. Last December, this is exactly 12 months ago. What were you guys up to?
Yeah, so I was running a business called Sundrift, which I founded. It's an e-commerce business that started off as a travel brand, but kind of ended up becoming an outdoor lifestyle brand, primarily because of COVID. Lauren was working in a startup in London, and Anya was working at Salesforce. And Anya and Lauren, so Lauren and I are school friends. We've known each other for years and years. We're very good school friends. And Anya and Lauren are friends from school. They both have like holiday homes down in West Cork. So they are like family friends, and like they are family essentially. So I've always kind of known Anya through Lauren. And this time last year, Lauren was over from London for a weekend in Dublin staying with Anya. And I called over for a glass of wine, and they had been talking about going into business together. They had been living in Skull during COVID and kind of, you know, had been brainstorming about like a sea swimming business. I don't actually know if anyone knows this, you know, I don't even know if they've ever told anyone this. They were brainstorming about going into a business together, and they were just asking me for like some advice on getting set up and all of that. And at the time, I suppose I was at a bit of a weird phase with Sundrift whereby, and we can probably get into this a little bit later, but I had diversified the brand quite a bit. And I was a solo founder navigating COVID that had directly, like overnight, just killed my business because it was a travel-based business.
Yeah.
And so it was a really difficult year, 2020. And I was kind of looking at Anya and Lauren talking about starting a business together and going, that would be so fun. Like I knew like if I was ever going to do another, like have another business, I would definitely do it with someone or like a team of people. I just knew that from my experience with Sundrift, because it can be a very lonely place. So I was looking at them and saying, do you know, like, oh, that's great. They'll have each other. Like maybe if I had someone, I wouldn't be feeling so like the fire in my belly had just kind of burnt out with Sundrift. I was feeling just a bit like not as passionate about it as I had been before.
What had it been doing before COVID? So it was travel business. What was it doing just before COVID?
So pre-COVID, I had only launched about 5 months before COVID.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I had been traveling myself. I was living in Australia, had been traveling and identified a need in the market. I was on a solo trip around kind of Southeast Asia and identified a need for female backpacks, because most mainstream backpacks had been at the time had been manufactured with or had been designed with the male torso in mind. And female torsos are very different.
Very interesting. So
Yeah, and it's not something that people think about. And I suppose I was staying in a lot of female dorms because I was traveling by myself, and I was just listening to conversations of people giving out about their backpacks, and they're, you know, they're too heavy and they just don't fit right. So when I came home to Ireland, I didn't have any work lined up, and I had just been working in a startup in Australia, which I absolutely adored that atmosphere. So I said, I'm just going to look into like what it would take to design this type of a pack. And I just got to work, and all of a sudden I was just launching a business. I don't know how it happened.
How do you launch how do you make a backpack? Where'd you even start?
I literally started drawing it up myself. And like, I'm not an artist or a designer or whatever, but I just started drawing up like my ideal pack and like where it would sit, how it would fit, what it would look like. And then just started contacting freelancers to turn them into technical drawings and getting pattern designs on them and all of that. And yeah, just it became like a problem solving thing every day.
Okay.
So it, like all of a sudden I had this prototype and it was terrible. I just, you know, kept working on it. And about 5 or 6 prototypes later had something that I thought, you know, people would buy. So I launched the business and by myself, and it was going quite well, like better than I had expected. So we're about 4 or 5 months in, and like primarily it was, you know, kind of young female backpackers purchasing the product. You know, the type of people who'll be off to South America, Southeast Asia, staying in hostels. That was the kind of target market. And obviously COVID comes along and overnight that just doesn't exist anymore. I had just actually been signing like a contract with Hostel World for a partnership, was really exciting. And obviously that all got pulled because Hostel World, like their business was totally affected overnight.
What did you think when it all started? Because I remember we're in similar enough businesses. I'm in the tourism business as well. What did you think when it all started?
I knew that it was serious, but I didn't think it would last that long. Mm. And I think, you know, people that say that they knew it would, you know, I think they're just completely like telling fibs. Like,
I don't think,
yeah, I just think that, you know, there was kind of the first week or so where I was like, oh, I don't know what to do. Do I just wait this out? Like, what happens? And then there was a period where I was like, oh, like I hadn't been hearing that Shopify ping for a couple of days, and I got really nervous. And it hit me. I was like, I could just totally like lose this business, and like all that stock that I had sitting down in my parents' front room. Sure, God love them. Got them to clear out like
the warehouse.
Yeah,
call it the warehouse, Mom. Call it the warehouse.
Literally. Like one day I was like, so these couches are going to have to go. And then the next day, 28 cartons of product arrive and they're going, oh God. So that's where my warehouse had been. And I said, you know, what am I going to do with all this product? Like, it's not going to sell all this. And like, I remember I went for a walk with a friend and I was really worried. Like, and I got like quite like, I can't believe this is going to fail. Like, you know, it hit me like a ton of bricks one day.
Right.
And then I got home and I heard the Shopify ping and that friend had bought a backpack and it meant the world to me. And it was just kind of that thing of like, keep going. Like, just, it was just the best feeling. And it was like, I really needed that, that little push of confidence, you know. So I said, I'm not going to give up on this. I'm just going to keep going and see what I can do. And if I put like everything I have into it, and if after another few months, like it still doesn't work, at least I've tried everything. And so I just went back to the drawing board and I looked at my target market and looked at like what they were getting up to during COVID now that they couldn't travel. And, you know, like obviously everyone had been locked down for quite a while. So, you know, things like there was a new kind of sense of appreciation, I think, for the outdoors.
Yeah.
And people were kind of hiking more and swimming more and all of this. And myself included, like I felt that too. So I started to like diversify the brand a bit and pivot slightly into that outdoor lifestyle space, because the packs that I had as well could also, you know, be used as hiking packs. And so I just developed more products and went from there.
Brilliant. So you doubled down. You were like, right, I'm going to pivot into this now and ask you.
Yeah.
Okay. Amazing.
Yeah. I just went for it. I just said, I'm not going to let this fail.
That's gutsy.
Yeah. It was scary.
Mm.
You know, putting more money into something as well, that it's like, and it was such the, like nobody knew what was going to happen with the economy at the time. It was a very unknown time, you know. So I just went for it because I felt like I didn't have a choice. I don't like to give up on things. I kept the head down and kept working hard, and come July of 2020, sales started to skyrocket. Not skyrocket, sorry. It was a small business that I have.
But the bell was going a little bit more regularly.
Yeah,
the Shopify was sending the email. Oh, where were you selling them? Were you selling them all online?
All online. Brilliant. They were all online. So I had actually been talking to retailers in Ireland just before COVID, but obviously they all had to close. So that fell through, you know, the Hostel World partnership fell through, and it just felt like it was the whole like Sundrift world around me was crumbling. But I just continued to sell online, and the ping started coming back during the summer. And then it got to the point where actually I couldn't keep up with the packing of the orders. Like my mom, who was fantastic, was like helping me pack all the orders at the time, and she just couldn't keep up, you know. So then I had to outsource the logistics, which was another big step for me at the time, because I suppose, you know, you're looking at the costs, and you know, the cost of someone picking and packing, and that really eats into the margins. But it actually was the best thing I ever did, because it freed up my headspace completely to focus on actually like the longer term of that product development piece and looking at what the target market we're getting up to.
So for anyone not familiar with that, what does that involve? You ship your products to a company and then they ship them out for you? Or how does that work?
Exactly. Yeah. So I just sent all my stock up to a warehouse in Dublin and then they were connected with my Shopify store. So anytime I got a sale, they packed the order and shipped it out to the customer.
Brilliant.
So, you know, and then they just bill you at the end of the month and there's a little bit of involvement, you know, and getting it all set up and stuff. But it's a massive time saver for a small business like myself that was spending, you know, it could have been a couple of hours every day packing orders. So it totally just like freed up my time and my room for thinking of other things. I just kept going. But I suppose what happened over time is like I initially launched Sundrift with this. I am really passionate about traveling. I guess I haven't had the chance to travel in the last couple of years, obviously. But my passion was travel. And I had this vision, you know, dream big of like one day my backpacks are going to be in every hostel in the world. And that was like really what like got me so excited about this business. And I think just over time, naturally, because of what happened, it turned into something that I hadn't really planned for, which is fine, but something that like I wasn't as excited about or something. And I just started, I think as well, it was a tough year, you know, like especially, as I said, being by myself. Over time, I just started to not feel as kind of like passionate about the whole project, I guess.
Was that a gradual feeling or was that something you kind of woke up on and you're like, oh, I'm just not feeling this?
No, it was completely gradual, to be honest. And I think I didn't even realize it at the time, to be honest, Gary. It was only when I started Riley and I felt that passion again that I was like, I was actually missing this.
Yeah, it's mad when you're in it, isn't it? Because you just survive and you're just like going and going and you're like, oh, this is life now. And you don't actually... remember what it feels like. It's a mad situation. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And it was complete hindsight. I was like, oh my God, like I loved it at the beginning and I was so excited. And then all of a sudden over time, it was just, I don't know, it just wasn't where I like what I wanted to be doing. And that led me to when I was having that conversation with Lauren and Anya and I was looking at them and saying, maybe I'd feel differently if I had someone else and all this. But ultimately, it kind of led to the creation of Riley because we were sitting around having a glass of wine that night, as you do. We were, you know, it was a couple of hours later, we were talking about like the birds and the bees and everything in between, as women do, like a few glasses of wine in. And we were at Anya's place in Dublin and she got her period and she didn't have any period products in the house. So I checked my handbag, I had nothing. Lauren checked her suitcase because she was over from London, her handbag, nothing. And we were like, how does this keep happening? Us, like, we know we're going to get our periods every month. Like, I run out, you run out, you run out. Like, this is just bizarre. So we had to trek off to the shop, kind of a bit of a mood kill. It was freezing cold in December. We got back. We were like, oh, that was just a bit of a pain. But obviously, every business starts with a problem. So we were saying like, surely there's a way that like this can just be easier, that like this just arrives to you or like you don't need to think about it.
It seems so obvious. I love these ideas because it just seems so obvious when you say it out loud and you're like, yeah. Because sometimes you have these ideas and you're like, no, that's too obvious. And you never even look into it. But like, it's just the best. But you can see the pattern with you as an entrepreneur there as well. The Sundrift with the bags and the packs and you're scratching your own itch all the time. Just going, but why though? Why is it like that? But why though? You can see that curious mind coming out again. It's a cool pattern.
Totally. Yeah. And I do like, I question everything. And you know, there's like, I suppose some things are just like, oh, there's a reason that doesn't exist. And then other things.
Oh, I've had a lot about those ideas. This notebook is filled with mainly those ideas.
And then there's other things that are like, oh, let's look into this, you know?
Yeah.
We just kind of started like, we were like a little bit tipsy chatting about it, being like, there's a way that this could be fixed. Cut to the next day when we're having a cup of coffee and like a little bit hungover and, you know, you kind of just think like, we were talking, who's talking last night. But one of us brought it up and we were like, come here, like, that conversation last night, like, what do you think? And we were like, let's have a little Google and look into this. And what turned into a little Google was like 4 hours later, like knee deep in research of it just spiraled. And what happened is we discovered that the period products we'd been using since we were, you know, young teenagers, just the mainstream ones that you get off the shelf and no one ever questions. We found out that the manufacturing process is actually just like really bad. Like there's bleach and pesticides and other chemicals used for the manufacturing, the growing of the cotton and all of that. And it's not always disclosed what's in the products. Mm. And there's plastic in them. And we had no idea, like, until we actually did this research. And we realized, like, surely not everyone is aware of this. And, like, there has to be a better way. Like, we're putting these in our bodies every month. That can't be good for us. So we thought, you know what? There's a better way of doing this. Not only that it's convenient that we don't run out, but, like, that it's actually better for our bodies and it's better for the planet as well.
Why do you think that was, Fiona? Like, some sort of taboo or some sort of, it just is what it is? Or what do you think it was?
I think it's a combination of both, to be honest, Gary. I think it definitely, it's still a taboo subject. And that's something that we're actively trying to change. Mm. And it's definitely getting better. But it is like, there's so many studies to show like that, like over 50% of young girls in school in Ireland are ashamed to talk about their bodies and about their period. And like, that's nuts. Like, it's just completely normal. But also the other side of it is, it has just been a completely dominated market by these big corporates that haven't been challenged.
Yeah.
And it is an industry that is on the verge of disruption, we believe, especially as women become more empowered and start talking about these things more. I think it's about time that someone challenges them, and, you know, not just us, that there's others as well, because they've had the power, I suppose, of not being questioned, if that makes sense.
What made you look at it and go, okay, there's giant companies here, they're ripe for destruction, or disruption even, versus there's giant companies here, they must have it all figured out and kind of boxed off? How did you break through that?
I suppose, like, we looked at the target market and just realized the size of it. It's just a market that is just, you know, obviously half the women in the world and all that. And we thought there's even if we're a small percentage of that market, even if we're a complete niche, there's enough room for us here to have a commercially viable business.
Yeah.
And so it was really about, first of all, figuring out if it was commercially viable. And once we realized it was, what we did is we said, okay, we'll spend a couple of weeks researching this and then we'll all go off for Christmas. Spend a couple of weeks with their families and not talk to each other about this anymore.
Okay.
And then come back in January and go decide, you know, when you sleep on something and you question something, like, will you have a different, like, thought process or whatever? Yeah. So we said, we'll go off and do that and come back in January and decide whether this is something that we actually want to do. Like,
that's really interesting, because exactly what I was going to ask you is, like, how did it go from the day after to actually deciding to drop the hammer on it? Because it's that intervening time where you're like, this is genius, this is terrible. Like, how did you, so you set a time just to back off from it?
Yeah, no, completely. And we did at the time, we were like, this is such a great idea, like, whatever. And then we were like, do you know what? We just need to take a step back because maybe there's other things to think about. So we did that. We spent 2 weeks like not talking to each other, just off with our families. And we all came back in January, jumped on a Zoom call, and it was like, are you in? I'm in. Are you in? I'm in. So the three of us were in.
On the count of three, pull up your hand.
Yeah. We all decided we are in. We're going to give this a proper shot. We were all working full time, but we said, we'll give ourselves a goal. We'll launch by X date. And, you know, within 3 months, we'll all be full time. And if we're not, like, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it 100%.
Right.
And if we decide, no, like, you know, we're not going to go full time, there's no point. Like, we want this to be a proper business. So yeah, we decided, and by the 7th of January, we'd incorporated our business, and by April, we'd launched market.
7th of Jan. He didn't hang around. Yeah. He did not hang around.
No. I think we all just realized, A, that we were really passionate about fixing this problem, because it's something we'd all experienced.
Yeah.
And B, that, like, we knew there was an opportunity and we needed to move quickly.
Okay.
So
talk me through that a little bit again there, when you said you were giving yourself 3 months, you were giving yourself X amount of time to launch and then 3 months to go full time. What was was there no plan B then, as in after 3 months, what was going to happen?
Yeah, we said if after 3 months of being live and if we don't have enough customers for us to take the risk and quit our full-time jobs, if there's not, you know, if we're not doing it right, or if the market isn't what we thought it was, then we'll just cut our losses.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hardcore.
We are. if there is, then we'll just take the risk. We'll, you know, it will be difficult at the beginning because we knew there'd be a period where we wouldn't be able to pay ourselves and all of that.
Yeah.
But if we're in it, we're all going to be in it together. And especially because there's three of us, like it had to be equal. Mm. We're all like,
I love it.
Gladly, to date, it's worked out. So we'll see how the next couple of years go.
You're all still talking anyway. I think that's really important though. I just want to touch on that a bit because especially with co-founders and especially with more than one founder, that can be a real tricky subject to navigate. The world is littered with stories of companies who never kind of figured all that out. Oh, we're best pals and oh, then we had a problem and blah, blah, blah. So you were very transparent and very direct from the start. Was that deliberate or was that just your style of how you all are?
It was very deliberate. Mm. We're very conscious that we were three friends going into business together and that we needed to protect that. So we essentially decided that when we were setting up and incorporating the business, we had a lot of very frank and honest conversations, and quite difficult conversations, to be honest, up front and get it all out there. And we planned, we have like a laser tight shareholders agreement that we signed from the get-go that's essentially planning for divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were like, we need to think of the worst case scenario that if something doesn't work out, and especially if there's money involved down the line, what it looks like for each individual person. And what that meant for us was there was no uncertainty of what if that happened, what if that happened. It allowed us to just forget about all that. It's all in that agreement. It doesn't matter. And we can just get our heads down, crack on and get on with the work.
I love that. I love that because I get a lot of questions off like entrepreneurs and oh, I'm going to set up this business and it's with my brother or my best friend. And I'm like, okay, plan with the end in mind. And they're like, no. What a buzzkill. And I'm like, it's not really though, but we're so the Irish way of like, sure, look.
Yeah.
Sure, we'll see what happens. Recipe for disaster. How did you craft that agreement? Because I think this is so important to emphasize for people how important these things are because they're often overlooked.
Yeah, they are. And I think as well, it's difficult to craft an agreement like that when you don't have like, at the time when we were doing it, we didn't have like full commitment of everyone, obviously, because I was still juggling another business and Lauren and Anya were working full time. So it's all well and good to say we will do this in 6 months or whatever. But because there was no guarantee, and we can take each other's word for it, but circumstances change and someone might have the best of intentions, but all of a sudden things can change overnight.
Life is strange. The world is strange, you know, especially now. So yeah.
Yeah. So we had to plan for that. And so we had things like, you know, vested equity over time, given you're, you know, committing X amount into hours a month into the business and all of this. Now, since then, obviously, we've rewritten our shareholders agreement because we are all full time. But like, it was really good at the time just to say, like, I think just, you know, I think what it did is it really built a trust amongst each other because we were all in agreement that we're going to sign this because we believe that that is what will be the case, and if it's not, then there's this agreement to fall back on.
For anyone listening who's in that position, how do you draw that up? Do you come up with it yourself? Do you get a solicitor? Do you get like a company's officer? What do you do?
We got advice from an accountant and business advisor who gave us a draft, and then we worked on a couple of different variations, and then we also had like a legal head look at it, and we took our time. And you know, it was probably a couple of weeks before we had the final draft ready to sign, and we didn't rush into anything. And so I think the best thing is to, even if it's just a friend, like if it's just a legal person or an accountant that you know is a friend that can help you get started with it, just to even have the template is like a good place to begin.
Brilliant. I absolutely love that. what happened then? So you started January 7th, incorporated, did the agreement, and then you had to go build a product.
Then we had to go build a product, yeah. It was a lot easier for me at that time because obviously I was my own boss anyway, so yes. My time was very flexible. And what ended up happening is that I ended up working mainly on Riley. Mm. And Sundrift kind of fell off my radar a little bit. Like, it was tipping away in the background. But I really just put a lot of my attention into Riley. And it was more difficult for Ony and Lauren because obviously they had full-time jobs. So it was their evenings and their weekends, really.
It sounds great, but it's tough.
It's tough. Yeah. It's very tough. And we worked really, really long hours. And we still do. But I suppose at the time, you know, there was kind of like no end in sight. But what happened then is we all got together the week that we were launching and when our stock arrived and all that, and spent a couple of weeks together down in Anya's place in West Cork. And we finally launched the business in April, end of April. And like within a couple of minutes, we got our first ping on Shopify. And we just like were jumping up and down screaming. There's actually a video of us because we recorded us going live.
Oh, I love it.
And people think that the video is actually like fake, but we were just that excited. We were screaming.
Fake video.
Yeah.
People have too much free time to think about things like this. Like,
if we could think of content that good, then we'd be grand.
They're so good at marketing.
yeah, imagine.
They're exciting times though, I'd imagine. Those couple of weeks.
Exciting.
They must be special times.
Yeah, they were. And like, it was, again, like, it's like everything, it is a complete roller coaster. There was lots of teething issues and like we ran out of boxes in our first week because we didn't expect that many sales and things like that, you know. And we like it's definitely a learning, and I think as well just us getting used to learning to work together. Mm. Like, it was only after a couple of weeks of having gone live, probably actually a couple of months in all honesty, Gary, that we realized that we weren't working very efficiently because we were all doing everything. Mm. And that we needed to like take a step back and give ourselves as a team like clear roles and responsibilities and clear accountability. And that worked wonders for us. But it was only until we actually started doing it that we realized, you know, that we had to actually work on that. So I think a lot of these things with startups is just like they're a work in progress, you know.
Mm. How did you come up with the roles then? Because that's quite tough.
So we had been working on the business for a few months, I suppose, and we all had different areas that we enjoyed, but we all have different skill sets as well. And it happened quite naturally because what ended up happening was we didn't foresee it, but we launched as a direct consumer business and kind of thought like potentially down the lines corporate sales would be fantastic in another 2 to 3 years once you've built up our brand and people know who we are. But they happened way sooner. We got lots, the Irish press is amazing. We got lots of coverage when we launched, and what that led to was a lot of inbound leads from corporates who were looking to like supply their staff bathrooms with free period products for their staff.
Amazing.
Yeah. And so we jumped on the opportunity, and Lauren, who has lots of experience in corporate sales, like that was her forte.
Okay.
She'd never done direct consumer before. And that turned into a much bigger part of our business than we had anticipated. And now Lauren like full-time looks after that.
Wow.
My experience is in direct consumer. So naturally, like the e-commerce side and the marketing, digital marketing fell kind of naturally with me. And then Anya wanted to learn more about the operations. So her background is in customer success. So she was looking after that, but she wanted to learn more about the operation side.
Mm.
It helped that all of our stock was sitting in her house in Skull. So she was kind of forced into it in a way, but she's been looking after all that and working on a really exciting project for us to outsource all that from Q1 of next year. So it just kind of has happened that way. And we're actually have decided that we're going to have a chat in the next week or so about next year. And do we want to continue with these, you know, particular roles and what that looks like going forward? Because over time, you know, obviously it will change. So like we really want to focus on product development and growing out the business that way next year, and who's going to be heading that up. So we're trying to plan for those kind of projects more clearly than we did at the beginning.
You touched on it there, but how did you, when someone launches, you know, I think a lot of people have time to be thinking about stuff now, and e-com has exploded in the last 12 months. A lot of people have kind of ideas for e-com products and websites and businesses. How did you get the word out there when you started? You kind of touched on it there, a little bit of press, but when you launched day one and you said, oh, ping straight away, how does that happen?
Yeah, so we had a few different strategies. We started building up our like social following before we launched by, I suppose, like sharing content online. And we built up our email database as well. So leading people to a landing page whereby they could leave their email so that on day one, then we could, you know, market to them and hopefully generate some sales. But we also put together a press release that we sent around to quite a large press list in Ireland, and we started generating sales that way quite naturally, which was great because I think it was a really good story for journalists to cover, like female founders starting this business that's a topical subject in the midst of a pandemic, and people found it really interesting. So we were lucky enough to get press, and then yeah, like we had our email list built up and our social built up, and then naturally it just started to grow from there. It was a couple of months before we actually started putting money into advertising, like on Google and Facebook, Instagram, all of that. We also started like a TikTok page whereby we like showed what we were doing the day of our launch, and like I think that the last time I checked, that video had like 50 or 60,000 views.
I love that kind of behind the scenes stuff. I'm addicted to watching that behind the scenes, like warehouse. It's a weird thing. I like watching warehouses and operations behind the scenes. I love that because it's just real. Like, and I think that's what a lot of brands are now recognizing. Like smaller brands can recognize that. It's like the guy that built Gymshark. Like he's been doing that since day one, and now he's able to go back and pull all these videos together of like, oh, this is me sewing it in my garage, and this is me finishing a pizza out and then going to deliver, and now they're worth over a billion. So like it's exactly. So
I think people like it because it's like it's not that, you know, pretend sexy glam side of this. Actually, there's like real people working really hard, you know, and people find it quite relatable. So we've kind of, you know, I suppose we've seen that from the results of our engagement rates on our social and stuff. And I think it's really easy for new businesses to try and put this professional front forwards when actually what I believe they should do is utilize that startup story for as long as they can, because that's only going to last so long and people really find it engaging, you know?
100%. It's like this podcast. It's just stories, narrative, people's stories. That's what people are fascinated by.
Yeah.
And exactly what you said there. Because then you reach a certain point and you're just another big business. You're just another big global corp with, you know, and you don't know who's behind it. And I love when websites are very personalized. You can see the team and you can see, you know, here we are, here's our office. And, you know, it matters, you know, because especially now when there's just so much noise, you're like, you're not sure who you're buying from. You know, it's kind of a generic packaging, a generic brand. I think it's so important now to show that personality and that those people behind the brands. You mentioned there about PR coverage, just a good story. This is something that comes up a lot. A lot of small founders can't get coverage and they're kind of amazed as to why it's not, you know, suddenly everyone is running to cover their new product launch. How do you craft that story? Obviously, you have to have an interesting story, right? You guys have an unbelievable story, but how do you craft that and you know, make people understand it or help them understand it?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because you're right, people aren't just going to cover you for the sake. You have to have that narrative and that story. And I think from our side, what we did is like we wrote our press release like from the eyes of the reader. Like, why would this, if this appeared in a journalist's inbox at 8 a.m. on a Thursday morning, why are they going to find this interesting over all the other press releases that they receive? And so it is about making that personal connection, you know. So we explained how we came up with the business, and a lot of the journalists that we were sending this to were female as well, so they found it really relatable, and like our plans and what we were doing, and got some quotes from from people and things like that. But I think for us, when we were reaching out to press, it was very important for us that we didn't just like email blast a whole list and say, there you go. Like, yeah, we made sure to do the research. It took time. Like, it took
Dear
a lot
sir,
of time.
Madam.
Yeah. Like, no, they're just going to bin that, you know? So we took the time to really research the journalists and figure out like who was on our target list and then why they were. So, you know, for example, reaching out to a journalist in her.ie who had recently written about female fertility, like they'll definitely find this story interesting, and actually like acknowledging that in your email. But it paid off for us, you know. We did get quite a lot of coverage, and like even now we try and maintain that relationship, not just with the journalists who've written about us, but we have some kind of micro influencers who are brand ambassadors for us, and we try and have as much of a personal relationship with them as possible, because ultimately they're like representing our brand. So actually later today when I'm getting off this call, I've got like about 60 boxes that I need to pack with like little gifts for Christmas, and I'm handwriting all of these note cards and sending it to them. And it's gonna take me a couple of hours, but like we want them to know that we're really grateful for the work that they're doing and really thankful, and that like as much as they're like, you know, looking at our brand and giving us coverage, like we appreciate that, you know, and like we want to make sure that if there's anything else in the future, that like they can contact us directly. Like, we'll jump on the phone whenever they need, and really like being open to that, I think, is very important. Like, at the end of the day, like, journalists are just the people who like to write stories. So you got to make that connection with them.
And this gets lost, right? In the world of social media and the world of kind of like mass marketing and mass advertising, someone's behind the computer somewhere. You know, mm-hmm. It is a person with a name, with a personal life, with interests. I think people forget that people are writing the stories. It's not just like been repackaged, and that personal connection is so key. Like, that's so interesting that you're taking the time. And also the traditional media route, people are overlooking that massively now still.
They are. And I think we really believe that there's still so much value in that. We're actually going to be looking at even like billboards and like TV and stuff for next year, because social media advertising and digital advertising, it's just like the costs are getting so expensive.
Noisy.
Yeah, very, very noisy. And even things like, you know, we've been looking into sponsoring podcasts and other avenues, because especially as well with the tracking issues on iOS for digital marketing, it's becoming less targeted, and it's more kind of like throwing things at the wall and hoping that it sticks. And that, like, you know, if we're going to do that, like, let's do more mainstream media, or, you know, and see if they work, because I think you just got to keep thinking outside the box, you know, and keep challenging. What's been working in the past isn't going to be working in the next kind of few years. It's always going to be constantly changing. I suppose as a team, try and be really, really open to that.
Mm. You don't know what you don't know. You don't know what might work. You don't know, newspapers. Oh, wow, that actually really works. And, you know, you can be clever about it and put in tracking codes, and you put in, you know, everything. It's fantastic. So you launched April. What was the next kind of couple of months like, that kind of exciting kind of period? Nerve-wracking but exciting. Like, how did that all go down?
Very exciting. What we were growing month on month, growing quicker than we'd anticipated. Very exciting. We all quit our jobs, came on full time. What we realized very quickly was that we needed capital.
I was just going to say, hold on, you all quit and then into the business. That's a heavy, heavy step to take.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, like, you know, like the girls lost their salaries, like, you know, and I think what we realized is not only do we eventually need to pay ourselves a wage sometime, but we also need help. Like, we need to grow out the team. We have very big plans for next year. Our market, our customer base to date has primarily been Ireland, and we have big plans to move across to like Western Europe and the UK. In 2022, and to do that, like, we need there's a lot of capital that is required. So come August, we started planning out our first fundraise, which we are like in the midst of signing, like basically we closed the round a couple of weeks ago, and it's kind of all going to be signed, sealed, delivered by the end of this week, hopefully.
Okay.
And now what we're doing is we're hiring, our first position at the moment. And by kind of the end of Q1 next year, we plan on hiring another person. And I suppose just really looking forward to, I touched on the fact that we're revamping all of the operations. Anya's working on that. And so we won't be packing the orders ourselves anymore, thank God. But we're also looking at, you know, logistics centers in Europe that we could potentially reach our customers out there far easier and quicker.
So you were bootstrapped up to that point of the raise, which is closing now. Okay.
Yeah. Completely bootstrapped, just ourselves. And you know, we're really happy with how the first year has gone. It's definitely been better than expected. We had a really nice boost last month from, we had an appearance on the Late Late Show when they did a show based on Irish businesses and who to support during kind of the festive season. And we had really nice growth from that. And we just are trying to maintain this momentum and make sure that we keep our eyes on the ball. I'm a very performance driven person. So I'll be like, you know, checking numbers every day and making sure that we're on track. And then it's nice to have a balance because myself and my co-founders are all so different that we complement each other.
Okay.
We complement each other nicely. We're taking kind of December now to take a step back and really look at next year and plan ahead. But we've got really, really big plans for, like, Riley, ultimately what we wanted to do, like, is improve women's lives. So, you know, we've obviously launched as a period care business, but we don't necessarily always want to stay or like just be a period care business. We kind of feel really passionately about the fact that as three female founders, you know, women in general, there's a lot stacked against us. You know, there's gender biases in the workplace, in home life. Female health, like, is a completely underserved market. You know, health studies are dramatically skewed towards males. And we just think that there's so much more that needs to be done. And we want to be part of changing that. So although we launched with period care, we think there is so much more that we can do. So we're trying to make sure that we are speaking with our community, engaging with customers and non-customers, and figuring out like what are our best next steps, and how can we, as I said, continue to improve women's lives as we go forward.
It's a lot in a year. What was it like raising money so quickly after only launching a couple of months previously?
It was great fun at the beginning, but it becomes a bit of a, like, the raising the funds, like, that is, I kind of led that project and it essentially becomes your full-time job. So for like any kind of founders or co-founders looking at a startup that they know they need funds, make sure that like, you know, that someone is going to be dedicated to doing that full time for a few months, because it is a lengthy process. Pitching to investors takes time. Getting things over the line takes time. There's lots of back and forth. It was a big learning curve. None of us had ever done a raise before.
Okay. How did you learn? How did you understand what to do? Because I think that's a big one to try to figure out.
What we did is we spoke to a lot of other founders that had raised before.
Okay.
We find that lots of Irish founders are really, really open and helpful. And so I would always say, just knock on someone's door and ask for help. And so those conversations really guided us into where we thought we could go. We initially looked at like angel investment. We looked at every single different avenue. We looked at friends and family, angels. We even spoke to a couple of VCs who had contacted us, but obviously we were far too early for them. But what we ended up doing was a crowdfunding raise.
Okay.
So it was slightly different, but what it meant is that all the friends and family that were interested and all of the kind of smaller angels that wanted to come in on, you know, relatively low ticket sizes could all get involved. And so we did it on the Cedars platform, and then we had two other private investors come in separately on that as well with slightly larger ticket sizes. So so altogether we raised 400K, and we know that we're going to have to fundraise again probably in 12 months' time. But what we've learned from this is actually, like, if we are going to go ahead with another raise, like, just to raise enough funds that we won't have to do it again for a very long time. Because it's,
I think that's,
very time-consuming.
Every founder I talk to says the same thing. But I guess it's one of those catch-22s whereby you're so young, you've no record, so you can only raise so much. But then when you do it, you're like, should have gone for five times the amount because it's such a job.
Well, it's interesting because we initially were going to go for a larger raise, and we had like offers on the table that we ended up turning down because we knew that regardless, is even if we took another 100k or 200k, we're still going to have to do another raise in 12 months time. So why not just do the bare minimum now at this valuation that will ideally be the lowest valuation we ever have? That will just be the bridge to that larger raise. And then when we go for that larger raise, just go all out and raise as much as we can. So it was a really interesting time because we were like, no, we might as well take as much funds as we can. And then when we sat back and thought about it, we said, there's no point because we're going to be raising again, like regardless. So it was, we changed our plans a lot and while we were going through it. And I think that was difficult because, you know, I think as business owners, we like to stick to plans and all of that, but you have to be flexible. And, you know, we had to be very open to like changing our minds on it like a couple of times and going back and forth. And hopefully we've done the right thing for the business at the time. Time will tell.
But what a year though. If we were having a coffee this time last year and, you know, you were chatting about Sundrift and stuff, and then you couldn't imagine flashing forward 12 months to now, I'd imagine.
No, not in a million years. Because in the midst of that, I sold my majority shares of Sundrift as well.
We didn't even get to that. I was trying to bring us back to that. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the midst of that, that was another thing. I'm like selling most of my business. Like,
what was that like? What was the feeling like?
Definitely. Like mixed, bittersweet.
Yeah.
Like I was so excited and ready to move forward with Riley. But you know what? It's actually probably worked out best for me because I'm still slightly involved with Sundrift. Like, so I can kind of dip my toes in when they need me and when I want to, but I'm focused on Riley. So it's been good. Like it was a good result for me as well. And I learned a lot from going through that process also, which
I would
hopefully
imagine
will stand to me in the future. Yeah.
You've had a wild 12 months.
It's been fun though.
And the pandemic has been going on and, you know, it just shows you though, I love stories like this because it can be quite negative at the minute. It can be quite draining listening to everything. It's brilliant to hear stories of people just getting on, making things happen and just overcoming it, you know, just pivoting and overcoming it. It's wild. So you mentioned you have kind of big plans for 2022. Can you give us a little flash forward into what you're planning?
Yeah, I think our main focus, once we get our operations all kind of streamlined and fixed, it will free up a lot of our time, especially Anya's time. And we're going to be very focused on product development. So as well, or, you know, the key hires that we're looking at the moment will free up more time for us. And we as co-founders really want to stay focused on the bigger picture because it's very easy to get lost in the day to day and, you know, bogged down with having to get things ticked off your list. And then all of a sudden you're saying, what did we actually achieve this month for the long-term view of the business? So I think what we want to do is just make sure that we're planning enough and hiring in the right way so that we have the capacity to stay focused on that as three co-founders. And, you know, we're happy with what we've done so far. And we feel like if we are able to free up that time in our heads and work together, the three of us, there's a lot more we can do. So we don't just want to stop here. So it will be interesting. I think we're going to continue with our customer discovery. We're very, you know, as I said, we've got the personal relationships with our influencers and all of that, but we're very focused on our customers as well. Like we love picking up the phone and just ringing customers, which when I say that to people, they think it's nuts. Like, and also even when you ring a customer and you're like, hey, I'm Fiona, co-founder Riley, they're like, why the hell are you ringing me? Like, But it's just,
I didn't
like,
complain.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just like, you know, just having that conversation and finding out what they like and what they don't like, and making sure that they know that they're being listened to is very important for us. So
what a resource, though, to have. You know, companies spend millions, you know, developing new products, and it's the product that no one asked for or wanted. It's just something that looked good in a marketing meeting, and just flew from there. It's incredible to be able to reach out directly to your customers. What an advantage to have. If you were going back, you've had a wild couple of years. If you were going back to Fiona of a couple of years ago before you started Riley and Sundrift, what would be the one or two bits of advice you'd say to yourself? Or 20.
Oh, well. Hindsight's a great thing, isn't it? Like, I would say, like, trust your gut, I think, and listen to your gut. I tend to ignore my gut a lot and just, like, you know, get my head down and actually, like, take a step back and listen to your gut and, like, realize that you know your business better than anyone else. So absolutely get as much advice from everyone that you you feel will be valuable and all that, but ultimately at the end of the day, like, just trust yourself. And I think get comfortable with not knowing what's next. And, you know, like, every day I'm coming in and there's just other, like, there's new fires, that is firefighting, like, it's, there's things that are always going to go wrong, and you just need to get comfortable with that, and stay lean and stay, I suppose, reactive. I think it's very easy to forget that and just try and almost, you know, put a routine or a process around your day. But a lot of the time that doesn't work when you're a business owner or a founder. You just kind of have to ride the waves. Makes sense.
There's a comfort in it as well. There's a comfort in having a set plan, and if I just stick to the set plan, nothing's going to go wrong. But it also blinds you, like, exactly like you said there, it blinds you to all the opportunities and the bigger stuff. That's brilliant advice. I think getting comfortable with not knowing what's next in 2021, that's probably the theme of the year. I think that's probably a great way to kind of end out the year. I always ask everyone for a book that's kind of had a big impact on you personally or professionally. Is there anything that kind of springs to mind that kind of you learned something from or just enjoyed?
Yeah, I was thinking about this because I've listened to other podcasts that you've done, and there's some really great recommendations in there, and I've been going, damn, they got that.
They took it. You can recommend it again. I'm actually doing a list. That's my job for the rest of the afternoon, actually. I'm doing a list of all the books, and then I'm going to rank them, and obviously people have recommended more than, you know, so we're going to say you know, 5 times recommended, 10 times recommended. So if it's already been recommended, do feel free to throw it in again. And anything else,
I'm going to do a bit of a ball curve one here, and it's not a, like, a businessy book at all.
Brilliant.
But one that I really loved was Open by Andre Agassi. I don't know if you've ever read
incredible.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a brilliant book. Like, it's all about, you know, his youth and his life and tennis.
It's wild.
But I just find it, like, a remarkably honest encounter of his life. Mm. And I think that talking about his struggles as openly as he did, I found it very, very refreshing. And I think it really resonated with me at the time, because I read it at a time where I didn't really know what my next move was in my career or what I was going to be doing. And it was right at the time when I was quitting a job and then decided to go work for myself. And it really hit me, because he spent his whole life doing something that he hated.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think it really hit me, because I was like, I don't want to look back on my life and realize that I've just wasted all this time doing something that I'm actually not enjoying. So that was great. And it talks all about his sponsorship with Nike as well, which is another great book I was going to recommend, was Shoe Dog from Phil Knight. But I know that's been on the pod loads.
I think I was doing a quick tally last week. I think that's the number one recommended book.
Is
it? Cracking read.
Oh, I'm not surprised. It's brilliant. And it's one that you can reread. I think just to learn about the resilience of someone, of a business that is obviously, like, one of the best known businesses in the world. Yeah. People just think that these just pop up overnight and they haven't gone through the struggles. And to read about it and learn that, like, most businesses, no matter how big they've become, have had these, like, you know, daily and weekly struggles to get to where they are. Mm. And actually being able to relate to someone like Phil Knight,
sounds bizarre, but it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's obviously another great one. But it's more of a common one, right?
They're brilliant. They're great. Open is just, it's kind of shocking when you read it and you're like, what? Because you project brilliance on all these people. You project flawlessness and brilliance and genius. And oh, they're just a different kind of, they're not really human. You know, you can't really relate to them on the telly. And then you see them and you read the book and you're like, wow, this is so raw.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant read. Fiona, where can people learn more about Riley and yourselves?
Yeah, so our website is weareriley.com. You can find us there. And then we're on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. Our handles are @we_r_riley. So you can find us there. And yeah, come say hi. We're very friendly and yeah, always open to having a chat with anyone.
Brilliant. Fiona, I love the name, by the way. It's just class. Riley, what a class
Thanks.
Name.
Yeah, we like it too.
Thank you so much for chatting, Fiona.
Thank you for having me, Gary. It's been a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that chat with Fiona from Riley. I loved it. I really had such a good time. You can probably tell as the chat went on. Loved Fiona. Loved her story. I'm really banking on them being huge in 2022. Maybe you could be our next rising stars in the next season. We're going to do one or two companies every season that I pick out and go, I'm going to put my money on the line here and say you're going to be huge in the next 12 to 24 months. If you think that's you, drop me a mail. MrGaryFox.com. Get me on any of the socials. I'll see you back here next Monday for an Idea Lab. Have a great week.